Ah, do you smell it? Do you smell it? Summer is over. Fall is in the air. And I am the Solemn Monster, back with you for another episode, episode 33 of RSPW Rewind, where we take a look back at pro wrestling on the internet, what was being talked about going back 20, even 30 years. You think that wrestling fans right now can be snarky on the internet? You think that social media now can be toxic online? Oh my goodness, I bet a lot of you weren't even born yet. There was a little place back in the day, and there still is, but there was a place back in the day called RSPW, which is where we pull these posts from. I go digging and I go searching and I find old message board threads from RSPW, the old news group. What were people talking about all these years ago, 10, 20, 15, 30 years ago? And we're back. We're back here with RSPW this week, and I'm so happy that you're with me, coming along for the ride. We begin this week with a WWF house show report. A WWF house show report for the Cleveland, Akron, Ohio area from December 29th, 1990. This was posted a couple days later on New Year's Eve. This probably would be one of the oldest posts that I have ever featured here on RSPW Rewind. It may be the oldest. From Ronald E. Graham. Starting off with Ronnie Boy. Says, what a break. My brother was unable to escort his 10-year-old son and two friends to this card at the Richfield Coliseum due to a work schedule change. And being the dutiful uncle that I am, I graciously volunteered to take his place and in the company of three 10-year-old boys. Little Quakesters. Surely great fans like these would make for a good time. See, so it starts out all innocently. You think, okay, just a fan going to a house show back then. Gonna have a good time. Gonna go see the matches. Then you realize why this is a very RSPW appropriate post. It says, well, the WWF never ceases to find a way to disappoint me. This first thing, ring announcer John Adams. I've never heard of a ring announcer named John Adams. I've heard of a president named John Adams. We actually in House of Glory, we have a great ring announcer, David Adams. Gotta give David a shout out. You should check him out. Voice at Voice of the Ring on Twitter. Shout out to David. He is very good at what he does. John Adams informs the crowd that due to inclement weather, four wrestlers would be unable to participate on this card. He says, please, Lord, let one of them be Hogan. No, it was Shane Douglas. No great loss. Not the last time we're going to mention Shane Douglas here this week. Hence why you see Shane Douglas on your screen. I don't know where I'm pointing. He's over there. There he is, right there. The franchise. I'm going to talk about him a little bit later. But Shane Douglas did have a cup of coffee for a while in WWF, way back when. So Shane Douglas was no great loss, according to Ronald. Jake the Snake Roberts, whose eyeball is said to be regaining some color, that was after the angle with the model, Rick Martel, sprayed him right in the eye with arrogance, remember that? On the Brother Love show. That was Bruce's show. Bruce? Bruce never leaves. Bruce never really leaves. Bruce is there. He was there back then. He's there now. May as well be Bruce's company. He says, the Legion of Doom also did not make an appearance. He was upset about the Legion of Doom not being there. He says, ah, well, the kids really wanted to see Hogan anyway. But wait. LOD's opponents were left with nothing to do, so Jack Tunney allegedly called the Coliseum and assigned a match featuring the Orient Express against Rick the Model Martel and Haku. What a weird team. Rick the Model Martel and Haku. Four heels in the ring at once. And Tunney also called a 14-man over-the-top rope battle royal as a make-good for us disappointed fans. Now, I'm not going to run through all of the results here. I will run through some of this here. We'll be here for a lot longer if I run through every match, but the Barbarian against Dustin Rhodes. Well, I was the only person in a 9-row section cultured enough to root for the Barbarian. Says Barbarian won by pin. Tugboat against Dino Bravo. Jimmy Hart really drives his man hard, having him jog in circles around the inside of the ring. Well, Dino did one of the most impressive things I have ever seen him do. He slammed Tugboat, the Shockmaster. He slammed him right in the middle of the ring. Said, would have had him too after the slam if it were not for some of the inane posturing he is becoming famous for. He says, why do bad guys find it necessary to posture, flex, and yell, get up, boy, instead of going for the win? I mean, aren't they here to win the match? So you gotta ask common sense questions, even in 1990. Common sense questions. If I had the sound off back in 1990, I'd be asking the same thing. Instead of going for the pin, Dino danced on Tugboat's ample gut, then flexed to the crowd with his back turned. Tugboat got right up, clotheslined Dino in the back of the head, and launched himself into a splash. Tugboat wins by pin. Bobby the Brain Heenan against the Big Boss Man. Remember, Bobby was making fun of Boss Man's mom on TV for the longest time. Bobby came in with a Hulk Hogan wrestling buddy. When Boss Man entered the ring, Bobby tried to apologize for calling Boss Man's mother names and offered the Hogan buddy as a gift for his mom. That's a very nice thing of him to do. He's offering him the wrestling buddy to give to Mama Boss Man. Call your mother. She'll tell you everything is okay. So Boss Man heads to the locker room with the wrestling buddy, scratching his head. And the fans implore Boss Man to stick around. Bobby turns his back. Boss Man runs back to the ring, hides underneath the ring, unbeknownst to poor Bobby Heenan. And Bobby looks around. He doesn't see the Big Boss Man anywhere. Gets on the microphone and says, okay, you humanoids, by now my man Haku should be doing a number on that big dummy. Uh-oh. Bobby turned around and there was the Big Boss Man. Boss Man won in about a minute. In a squash. See, now, if this were WWE today, this would be dragged out for about 15 minutes. Bobby would get a series of holds in, like Michael Cole did to Jerry Lawler at WrestleMania. And it would just go on for far too long. Although there might be a commercial break in there. You have Gorilla Monsoon on commentary if this were on TV talking about when Wrestling Challenge rolls on. Boy, you don't know. You don't know how lucky we were. Those of us who lived during that era with the syndicated shows and all that, all the late 80s, early 90s, man, we had it great. Oh, we had it good. We had it great. Power and Glory against the Rockers. It was amazing to me that four guys as seemingly well-conditioned as these were spending two-thirds of the match in rest holds. And once again, I am the only guy in the section with the moxie not to root for the Rockers. Well, isn't this guy edgy? Ronald thinks he's a big shot. He's cheering for all the heels. He's going counter to whatever the company wants him to do. He's cheering for all the heels. He says the junior high school girls were the worst. They were standing the entire match for Michaels and Jannetty. No charisma for either team in the final minute. A small package was reversed twice, with Shawn Michaels finally pinning Paul Roma at 15 minutes. So then he goes into the Orient Express against Haku and the Model, and I maintain what a weird fucking team that is. The Model, Rick Martel, and Haku against the Orient Express. You got four heels here in this match. And Ronald says, how is it that fans don't care about matches like this? Even if you hate all the guys involved, you get to watch them beat each other up. But he says there was a mass exodus to the bathroom during this match. And once again, he was the only guy in the section with the sufficient chutzpah. That's right, chutzpah. To make noise, and he rooted for both teams. 14-man battle royal. Even though there were only 12. And in the end, Tugboat threw out the Barbarian to win. And in the main event, Earthquake against the Hulkster. This is what all the little kids, all the little Hulkamaniacs came for. Not Ronald, but all the Hulkamaniacs were there. Earthquake does the tremors in the squash. Hogan kicks out. He does the Hulk up, the big boot, the leg drop, the body slam. And the pin said the best part came afterwards, after 3 minutes of flexing and listening to cheers on the part of the egomaniac Hogan. Earthquake spared us for more with a run-in and a chair to Hogan's head. Happy holidays. And that is a report from Ronald E. Graham. Well, that sounded... That definitely sounded like a house show report that would be sent into the Observer, complete with snark. So we move on. October 25th, 1992, mere weeks after Bret Hart beat Ric Flair to capture his very first WWF championship. Remember in Saskatoon, that was in October of 92. A few weeks later, and perhaps we have some Canadian viewers right now who are going to watch this, who are tuned into this right now, who can shed some more light on this in the comments section. This is a post by Brian Smith titled, Bret Hart and the Canadian Constitution. Some words I never thought I would see put together, but here we are. Here we are in RSPW Rewind, talking about Bret Hart and the Canadian Constitution. Many of the Canadian RSPWers are probably agonizing about how they are going to vote on Monday on the Charlottetown Accord and would like some guidance to help make their decision easier. Here are the feelings of Bret the Hitman Hart, as quoted by the Toronto Star. I'm gravely offended by the high-handed political extortion being perpetrated by Brian Mulroney. I always get calls in the middle of RSPW Rewind here. I'm busy, people. You can't be calling me and texting me and bothering me. I got my audience right here I gotta work for. So, don't fucking call me. Where was I? High-handed political extortion. That's where we were. Being perpetrated by Brian Mulroney and his philandering crew of political lackeys. Just put that in do not disturb mode. And Bret Hart said, I'm going to vote no. So, he's identified in the article as the WWF champion, says Brian, so the quote is recent. Does anybody think this is the real Bret Hart speaking, or did he borrow one of Vince's scriptwriters? The rest of the world, the Charlottetown Accord is the latest of many attempts to change the Canadian Constitution, and if the politicians are to be believed, the last chance to keep Quebec from separating from Canada. Well, this was in 1992, so here we are now, almost 30 years later. Quebec is still part of Canada. But to anybody who wants to shed some more light on the Charlottetown Accord, comment down below. This is the first I'm hearing about it. Dave Meltzer. Dave Meltzer has been in the news a lot of late. Ryback said that the world would be a better place if Dave Meltzer were 6 feet under. Rusev, Miro, whatever you want to call him, said that Dave Meltzer, when he dies, is going to burn in hell. These were real comments made by people who are, I guess somehow, they've got a functioning brain. In the case of Ryback, maybe not, I don't know. I know Ryback's explained himself, but I still think that's a bit over the top. But he's sticking to his guns. But this is just to illustrate the point that people are very, very opinionated when it comes to Dave Meltzer. Very polarizing figure. Remember how John Cena used to be very polarizing? WWE would call him controversial. Michael Cole, he's the most controversial star. No, he's not. There's nothing controversial at all about John Cena. I mean, he is the most white meat babyface of the PG era. He's polarizing. Those are two different things. Controversial and polarizing are not the same thing. Dave Meltzer is very polarizing. But here's a post from February 11, 1995. By The Bogus Prophet, titled Dave Meltzer's Dream House Show. It says, having read Dave Meltzer's comments on the ECW February 4, 1995 show and lifting my jaw off the floor, I was wondering what kind of house show lineup would get Dave pumped up, excited, and enthusiastic. He clearly was not any of those things at the ECW arena. And his report makes me believe that he was either resistant to or unable to enjoy the show. So this leads to a natural question. What kind of house show would get Dave Meltzer to completely mark out? What matches, either already done or dream matches, would it take to make him rediscover the fun and excitement he might have once had for pro wrestling? I can just hear everybody now listening to this. Put it in the Tokyo Dome! Put Kenny Omega in there. I didn't see any Tokyo Dome jokes with all the Dave Meltzer posts back in the day, but Dave Scherer chimed in. That might be a name you remember as well, that you know. Dave Scherer, another name in the wrestling reporting community. He was very active on RSPW back in the day. He says, okay, I'm going to post some things I know from what Dave has told me. It says, fact. He has said that he does not like Todd Gordon. He thinks or thought, as he said this months ago, that Gordon is just a mark who will spend money to get his face on TV. Number two, when Dave first heard of the Flair is Dead chant, his jaw dropped. When I told him that I was the one who started it, there was a moment of silence. He does not like the Flair busting in ECW. And number three, he loves Japanese wrestling and AAA. I have been told by people that have seen him at Japanese and AAA shows that have said he popped wildly for all of the hot moves. This is part of what surprised me when he did not pop for some of the hot moves last week. PJ chimes in on some of the flaws of ECW. Says, I was in town for a convention and went to the show. I thought Meltzer's report was largely accurate. I enjoyed the show a great deal and the crowd even more, but I also see some of the negatives. A virgin in a wedding dress being pile-driven for me, being the worst. Who is this virgin? I'd love to know. It could be any number of fans in the ECW arena. My other point is, while all the brawling outside the ring might be great for the people in the first row and on TV, those of us in the bleachers missed most of the matches. Finally, I did think the Sandman vs. Cactus Jack match was too good, and I guess now I know, or wasn't too good, and now I know why. There has to be a happy medium between the Lex Luger let's not even touch each other style in WWF, and this type of occasional insanity like the blade jobs and power bombs onto tables, where wrestlers are putting themselves at risk. I want to watch wrestling to be entertained, not to gape like I was driving by a car wreck. Oh, little did he know that it would only get worse. Poor PJ. Poor PJ had no idea what was coming in the late 90s. Keeping it on the subject of ECW, May 9th, 1998, Jack Epstein with the post. Shane Douglas is a whining bitch. Anybody agree? After watching Wrestlepalooza again, I have concluded that Shane Douglas has become the biggest bitch in the wrestling world. Someone said on RSPW that Shane has aged 20 years in the last two, and they're right on the money. Shane used to be a good wrestler, especially when matched up against good workers. Then he left for the WWF, and the WWF immediately put him in a feud with Razor Ramon, who was the number four guy in the company at the time. Shane gets a pinfall win over Razor within 2 months of joining the company. He then gets the Intercontinental title shot at In Your House. Shawn Michaels did not want to go out there and give a half-assed performance, so he gave the belt to The Dean. And Dean Douglas, within 3 months of joining the WWF, was the Intercontinental Champion. Problem was, he had no heat. Says fans could not give a shit about him, so he jobs the belt to Razor Ramon. Subsequently, after Survivor Series in 95, he claimed a back injury and got out of his contract to return to ECW. And he bitched and moaned about Shawn Michaels, Razor, blah, blah, blah. For the last 2 years, Shane has done nothing but piss and moan about Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair. Hey, Shane, when was the last time you put on a 5-star match in front of 20,000 fans? And by the way, the steroids killed Shane's physique. He looks bloated and very unnatural. And then Jack levies some other accusations that I will not repeat. And he ends his post, agree or disagree? So those are some pretty pointed comments there about Shane Douglas. Warrior330 says, although I am not anything close to a fan of the character, Shawn Michaels is a great asset to this industry. Breaking the job down to two ends, Mike skills and ring ability, he excels in both. He's over as a face, and he is over as a heel and a tweener. He always gives his all and puts on the best show he can, and that degree of intensity can cause anyone to become injured. And even injured, he still carried the match where he jobbed the title to Steve Austin at WrestleMania. Shane Douglas, on the other hand, is a whiny little bitch. It's the second person now. Whiny little bitch. Shane Douglas is legitimately bitter that he has not been handed superstardom within the big two companies. So he always runs back to his buddies in Philly and bitches about how they're just afraid of his talent. Wow. No gimmicks needed, says, I gotta agree with you on this. It seems as if the only thing he's good for anymore is drawing heat. The injuries just keep piling up on the guy. It's like he can't wrestle a match without hurting himself anymore. When he first came to ECW in 1993, he had one of the brightest futures in the sport. And now he gets on the mic, he bitches and moans for 15 minutes, and when he wrestles, he throws a punch here and there, uncorks the belly-to-belly. This is from the man who once said, it still says wrestling on the marquee. What a hypocrite. And there were a ton of other posts that I found. I mean, I could have gone on for another 20 minutes just reading off all the hate that Shane Douglas was getting in this thread and agreeing with Jack's sentiment in the opening post. Well, one person who had heard enough, and seen enough of all the hatred and all the negative comments was Francine Fournier. Is it Fournier or Fournier? Fournier makes it sound very sophisticated. We'll say Fournier. But yes, the real Francine from ECW, the same Francine who managed, in fact, at that time probably was managing Shane Douglas in ECW, replied here to Jack's post. And Francine, there were actually quite a few personalities in the wrestling world back then who lurked and posted occasionally on RSPW. Mark Merrow was known for that. Francine was another one. Francine was, as I said, managing Shane at the time, and so she leapt to his defense. She says this. In response to Jack's witty posting about Shane, I have two words for you. Fuck you. First of all, he does not do drugs. The guy doesn't even like taking aspirin. How the fuck do you know anything about him? Do you know him like I do? No. Now, I can't bitch about you commenting on his work rate because an opinion is like an asshole. Everyone's got one. Doesn't mean that you're right. I totally disagree, but don't even go saying he's a cokehead without even knowing. All you are is an ignorant fucking mark who posts here and tries to look important. Get over yourself and show some respect for a guy who, with a broken palate, a broken cheekbone, and a bum arm, goes out and gives his best for you, the fans. So Francine laying the smacketh down on Jack Epstein. Now, a few months earlier, on February 23rd, 1998, Kay Habarak posted, hoping to get a reply from Francine, asking, Francine, what happened? Says, what was the deal with your dress a few weeks ago on ECW TV? You did a run-in and the dress was almost completely off. If it was not like that on purpose, I admire you for still doing your job. Francine was the first person to respond. Francine saw the post and she replied. She says, I've been asked this question a million times. Here's the deal. The dress was made of rubber. I gotta go back and see what this dress looks like. The dress was made of rubber. The zipper zipped upward, not downward. I had to do a run-in, and I left a slit made by the zipper so that I could run in the dress. The zipper zipped down to my ankles. So when I went to get into the ring, I put my leg up, and boom! The zipper became unzipped, and there I was. There she was. Should I do the spot and be professional or run away crying like a baby? I chose to continue, trying my best to cover anything that was hanging out. One of the most embarrassing moments ever for me, but I got a standing ovation from the boys in the back, I'll bet. I got a lot of praise that night just for keeping my cool and going through with the business. That's the whole story. I'm sorry if I offended anyone. It was an accident, and I hope it never happens again. Something tells me I don't get the sense that too many people who would have been posting on RSPW at that time minded very much. For example, T-Hawk. T-Hawk was very blunt. T-Hawk was very direct in his response. He says, I was not offended, and I love the thong panties that you were. Nice buns. Panties that she wore. Nice buns. And Francine appreciated the compliment from T-Hawk. She said, then be sure to order the pay-per-view this Sunday. You'll love what I'm wearing. Now, as part of what I do here, I do my research. You got to do research. Doing research is very important. You're going to go back and check out all these old posts, or when I do the This Week in History stuff on the podcast. You got to do your research, right? It's what I do. So for research purposes, I went and I brought up that pay-per-view on the WWE Network. It was Living Dangerously 98, for those who would like to check it out. So I wanted to see what Francine was wearing. I wanted to see what she was talking about. You know, she was hyping it up here in this post. So I said, I got to go check this out. And I was going to screen cap it for all of you. I was going to take a screenshot and put it up here, but that would upset the YouTube gods. So we won't do that. I'll just say this. Francine was definitely dressed for the occasion. I'm assuming it was the ECW arena. But she was dressed for the occasion. She was looking lovely that night. Still does. I gotta say, you know, the years are not always so good to all of us, right? As we all get older, as we all age. You know, Father Time is better to some of us than others. Francine, I saw her recently. There's a clip on the Hannibal YouTube channel of a shoot interview that, you know, they did the split screen. She was from home being interviewed, and she looks better today than she did back then. She has turned back the hands of time. I think it's really cool, actually, that Francine was posting on RSPW and just, you know, she was putting people in their place when appropriate. But I think it's cool that she was hanging out and chatting with the fans. And we'll end with a WWE post. We go back to December 16, 1999. A post by Dr. Strangelove with the title, "The WWF Will Suck in the Year 2000. Remember those old Conan O'Brien segments? In the year 2000. I should have gotten my flashlight. Turn the lights out. Remember La Bamba? He would hold the flashlight up under his chin. And anyway, I saw that title and I almost just completely disregarded the post because 2000 may have been the best year for WWE. Creatively, in terms of the talent pool they had, what they did with that talent. If it's not the best year the company ever had, it's one of the top two or three. WWF in 2000 was awesome. And they were forced to be because they were without Stone Cold. Stone Cold, their biggest attraction, was out. I mean, Rock was just about right there with him, but Rock stepped up, Triple H stepped up. A lot of people stepped up that year, but Dr. Strangelove, how could he know, right? But he tried to explain himself. He said, here's why. Here's why he thinks WWF in 2000 is going to suck. I cannot see the current Stephanie McPiggy angle lasting much longer past the Royal Rumble. And currently, it's the only angle that exists in the WWF. And personally, I don't think the WWF has anything else to give. Now, he's being an asshole here with the McPiggy comment, but he was referencing the angle with Stephanie coming together and marrying Triple H. So think about that. Think about what Dr. Strangelove is saying here. This angle has no legs. It's not going to go anywhere. By the Rumble, it's all going to be over. And here we are. Here we are 21 years later. And, boy, that's 0 for 1 for Dr. Strangelove so far. And then he lists a whole bunch of names and what he thinks the future holds for them. Steve Austin says even if he does come back, it's doubtful he'll wrestle. And if he does, he'll be more limited than before. It's partly true. He was partly right. Mick Foley will have to retire by WrestleMania. He is looking worse and worse. Test. Horrible mic skills means he will not get over again. Edge, see test. Matt and Jeff Hardy, see Edge and test. Boy, this is not looking too good for Dr. Strangelove. The Rock, will he have any new catchphrases for the new millennium? Big Show, not over, never will be. Triple H, has gotten much better, but only has two main eventers to feud with. Val Venus, promising if he drops the dick jokes and takes a more serious approach. Val Venus, by the way, in the years since he has retired, he did drop the dick jokes, he did get more serious, and it's not pretty. So, I count that as an L for Dr. Strangelove. D'Lo Brown, no mic skills, mid-carder for life. Mark Henry, mid-card for life. Taz, his size will not allow him to get over. X-Pac, only going to get worse. The New Age Outlaws will be tiresome as a tag team by then, and both have had failed singles runs. Undertaker, ready to go, but how much time does he have left, and how much more does his body have left to give? Kane, probably will have to drop the mask and assume a new role if he is to go beyond what he is now. Well, that came a few years later. He wasn't too far off. And then these are the two best. Chris Jericho will never be more than a top mid-carder. He just is not capable of connecting with the audience on a higher level. Boy, don't let Jericho hear that you said that. How about that? And the McMahons will absolutely be worn out after WrestleMania. And WrestleMania 2000 was the whole McMahon in every corner. We were still a few months away from that. So Dr. Strangelove was dead on there. He was absolutely right about the McMahons. They've been worn out for the last 20 years. But as for his other predictions, I would not let Dr. Strangelove prescribe me anything if he were my doctor. If he tried to prescribe any kind of medication for me, I would not take it. That's for damn sure. But Chris Jericho, you heard it here. Mid-carder for life. That did not age well. Subscribe! Like and subscribe. More RSPW coming soon. You will not find it anywhere else but right here. I'll see you guys next time. Take care.